Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our line to text and call. Doing mailbag today. This entire show is going to be revolved around mailbag. So thank you for everybody who's sending questions in. You know, especially last night, we've got a bunch of voicemails to play today's episode. Once again, 331-979-1369. If you want to leave us a text or a voicemail, you can do that there. We'd love to hear from you. So please continue to interact with us. Matt, what's going on? How are you? Little craziness on Bulls Twitter last night, especially with comments made by Woj.
And they're going to be sneaking in free agency. They've got a young core that people want to play with. It's Chicago. They have sped up that rebuild in Chicago. They're going to be, I think, a factor in July.
What did you make of those? Just quick reaction for me.
What's going on, Jordan? Bulls Nation. Yeah, the Woj comments, I thought, you know, are hilarious because it's Woj, right? And he is the be-all, end-all in who NBA Twitter trusts right now as far as if Woj says this thing is real. And he was just on a talk show. I don't know. It was SportsCenter or whatever, saying, the Bulls might be sneaky players in free agency. And then, boom, Bulls Twitter explodes. You and I have talked at length about how we don't believe the Bulls to be big players in free agency this summer, largely because they aren't really there yet in this rebuild, despite Paxson saying we want this to be a quick rebuild on the fly. Paxson also has said that they don't really project to be big players in free agency. So whether or not you believe Paxson, I feel like you and I are in agreement that it would be a surprise if the Bulls actually did go out and like make a big play, like going after a name like Clint Capella or something like that. Certainly, I mean, like going after Paul George or Kawhi would be insane. So, I mean, I think it's because it's Woj. Everybody was like, oh my God, this is real. This is happening. He's just talking. You know, it wasn't an official report. It was just speculation. Even though it is Woj, at this point, you take it with a grain of salt. We're still several weeks away from NBA free agency. So pump the brakes, but Bulls Twitter is not so good at pumping the brakes, I suppose.
And I got to admit, I was part of that in kind of trolling some Bulls fans that I don't know if they...
Well, your tweet was amazing. Your four-picture tweet with the bloodshot LeBron eye. I mean, like, come on, dude. That was fantastic.
I'll be honest, I've been saving that since the moment he's got poked in the eye. Like, I saw that, and I was like, see red? Oh, my God, I got to find a way to incorporate that. But the one thing I want to say about this is... As well connected as Woj is and as popular as he is, and for the most part, most of his reports have been correct. The one positive I take out of this, even if the Bulls, if this is just a complete smokescreen, if the Bulls aren't really players in free agency, which both you and I have already agreed that I don't think that's really an option unless LeBron decides to do something crazy, like maybe go to the Rockets or something like that happens. Guys in this league, looking at this Bulls team, him saying that they have a young core that players want to play with. Now, is that Is he hearing that from players? Is he just saying that to be generalized, just to kind of generalize what the Bulls have done in 1 year of a rebuild, having Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Chris Dunn? Or has he been talking to players and saying, you know, maybe bringing up the idea? Or has other players said, you know, Chicago could be a destination spot? You know, they've got a young core. So I think you can take a little bit of a positive out of that if, in fact, he talked to players and said, and a couple players brought up Chicago as being a place that has a young core that they want to play with.
Yeah. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility to suggest that while the Bulls did struggle and their young core, when they did play together, looked the opposite of cohesive, there are still positive signs and potential for all three of those guys if the Bulls do in fact plan on keeping and building around Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the most promising core in the league right now. I mean, that's a big leap and a big stretch. You can't even really say that about the Eastern Conference with what the Celtics and the Sixers have working with right now. That being said, if the Bulls and their core that we're talking about put together another strong season and show growth, real legitimate growth, and go from being a 25-27 win team to maybe closer to a 40 win team this season, then you're talking about a core that somebody might be attracted to come play with and be the guy or one of the guys around that team. I think to talk about that kind of situation this summer is premature by a year. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
I think you're right, and we'll have to find out too. I feel like maybe who the Bulls take at number seven or what they do at draft nights might tell us a little bit about what free agency might look like. But I think if I had to place my bets, you and I both, we would say there's not going to be like some outrageous move being made this summer, at least. Maybe talking about being a player and free agent means re-signing Zach LaVine and bringing back David Nwaba and signing Bobby Portis to an extension and maybe bringing Noah Vonleh back to this team and rolling the dice on him. So that's all it could mean as well. But I took it as a positive if, in fact, there are players around the league that are looking at this Bulls team after 1 year of a rebuild and saying, hey, you know, if this is a place that has a young rising core in the East and LeBron's going to maybe leave the East, this might be a cool place to play. So I'll give them Bulls fans should be at least a little bit happy about that, that other players are looking around this league and take it for what it's worth just being mentioned. No players obviously being mentioned here, but take it for what it's worth and I'll take it as a positive.
Yeah, I think so too. Real quick, Jordan, before we get to our mailbag questions for today's episode, I wanted to give all of our Bulls listeners a heads up on a great piece of reading that you can do today. If you're looking for something to read on your commute, on the train, whatever, Chris Ballard, who is a very strong sports writer for Sports Illustrated, earlier today released his most recent column, and it's about comparing Draymond Green to Dennis Rodman, and that Draymond is sort of the modern era's Dennis Rodman, the next, you know, calling Dennis Rodman Draymond before Draymond. And obviously there are all sorts of wonderful ties and connections there because Steve Kerr, who is coaching Draymond right now, played with Rodman for those three seasons during the second Bulls three-peat. If you are a diehard Bulls fan of that 90s team, myself, you know, a kid growing up in the 90s, I was obsessed with Dennis Rodman and that Bulls team. He's a very fascinating story, a Hall of Fame player who has all sorts of weird things that went on and is still going on in his life outside of basketball and after basketball. If you are maybe a younger Bulls fan who doesn't remember the Rodman years, wasn't even around during the Rodman years, I highly recommend you go read this piece. It's on Chris Ballard's Twitter timeline. I quoted it. It's on my Twitter timeline right now. It is a fantastic piece of writing about one of the most fascinating players the NBA has ever seen. So if you're looking for something to read today, check out Ballard's piece on Dennis Rodman and Draymond Green. It is fantastic.
Isn't Dennis Rodman, didn't they say that he's set to meet in North Korea for their summits later this month? Did I read that correctly?
There are some rumors about what exactly Rodman's involvement in that will be, if any. And, you know, even without Rodman, the North Korea summit has been like on again, off again, on again, off. I think right now, as of right now, it's on again. Well, you know, who the hell knows? But Dennis has already made 5 trips to North Korea over the past several years and is buddy-buddy with Kim Jong-un. Went on Colbert's late night show a few months back to talk about it. It's weird. And that's actually one of the elements of this column that Ballard wrote for SI, talking about how you know, people who loved Dennis Rodman, the basketball player, should feel about Dennis Rodman, the guy who's trying to be some weird ambassador, but, you know, is really, even as much as you love Dennis, the basketball player, right now is pretty naive about what's going on with North Korea and his buddy Kim Jong-un. So who knows what how that will play out in the future, as Rodman is some weird quasi-ambassador for the U.S. in this very tumultuous situation that's got going on right now. But that's also something that Ballard discusses in that piece, so people should definitely go give it a
one last thing too. I was listening to a podcast that was interviewing Gary Payton, and he talked about the best shit talkers in basketball, on the floor, off the floor, and they asked him about modern and also guys that he played with. He brought up Reggie Miller, he brought up Michael Jordan, but he also said that Draymond Green, he felt like in the modern NBA, is the one of the best trash talkers, and he doesn't really care what other people think. So I thought that was pretty cool. Pretty cool testament for Gary Payton. And obviously, more connections you can make to Dennis Rodman, it kind of makes sense. And I really didn't even think for a second until you brought it up about Steve Kerr playing with the connection of Dennis Rodman and maybe trying to make him the new era Dennis Rodman with his rebounding ability and being able to stretch the floor. So that's very interesting. I'm going to have to go read that.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, the Gary Payton connection there. I mean, Dennis terrorized the Sonics in those 96 finals. A lot of people think Dennis should have been the MVP of those NBA finals in 96. You know, frustrating the hell out of Sean Kemp, just destroying them on the boards. I actually, in one of our Bulls history videos yesterday that I put up, I highlighted game two of the 96 finals when Rodman had 20 rebounds, 11 on the offensive end, and several of those 11 offensive rebounds came late in the fourth quarter of a very close game. Rodman essentially iced that game for the Bulls to go up 2-0 in that series. So, gotta love GP. GP was one of the best trash talkers in the league in his own right. But Dennis, mind games, absolutely terrorized the Sonics in those 96 finals.
Yeah, if you guys can go find that Gary Payton interview, he had some really cool stuff to say about when he played with the Lakers and that team with Karl Malone and Kobe and Shaq and sort of what happened there as far as the breakup went. It's really good stuff. Gary Payton, if you're interested in, you know, the 90s, early 2000s basketball and just talking about playing with some greatness, I mean, Gary Payton was the perfect one to listen to, so I'd highly recommend that. Before we get to voicemails and all of your texts and your questions from social media, Matt, I put up a poll on our Locked On Bulls feed, and I want Bulls fans who are listening to this that might not be on Twitter or don't follow us on Twitter to go and at least vote on this poll, because it's got about 8 hours left, and we've got a really good chunk of the sample size from Twitter, but I want to know a little bit more, get a little bit bigger sample size from other Bulls fans out there. So I posed both of these questions because I was curious. You know, there's talk and chatter about who the media thinks that they should take at number seven and who we thought the Bulls might take at seven. But I was curious who Bulls fans would be most excited about and most disappointed with coming into the draft. So the four options are here: Trae Young, Mikal Bridges, Michael Porter Jr., or other. And this is about being most excited and the most disappointed. I put those same three players. Most logically, those players might be available at seven. And other, most excited with 63% of the vote, Michael Porter Jr. The next, Trae Young, 13%. Mikal Bridges at 12%, and then other with comments at 12%. And the most likely comment there you can find is Bamba basically being the most excited if the Bulls happen to get him, if he happens to slide, whatever the case may be. But Bamba was a common theme across people who might have voted other, because I asked people to comment below. The most disappointing at, which I was completely shocked by this, most disappointing at 47% has Trae Young. Bulls fans who say they would be the most disappointed by the Bulls if they took Trae Young at seven. I'm kind of shocked, honestly.
I think a lot of Bulls fans are skeptical about Trae Young translating his game to the NBA. The size alone, never mind the defensive problems. The size alone is like, yeah, okay, maybe he's Steph Curry light with his range and his ability to shoot the ball, and he's also a gifted passer and all these great things he could do on the offensive end. But the size, man. It, like, Steph Curry is a rare breed. Russell Westbrook is a rare breed. Guys who are undersized and can still... And really, Russell is not that undersized. But guys who can dominate at the NBA level as small as a guy like Trae Young is, it's very rare to see guys like that. And I think Bulls fans also don't really understand the concept of taking Trae Young when we have Chris Dunn and are trying to develop Chris Dunn and turn him into our point guard of the future. I'm not surprised that Trae Young was the answer to that one of, you know, most disappointing. Maybe the other realistic answer would have been Bridges, just because a lot of people feel like he would be like a safe but blah pick that's not very exciting. You know, high floor but low ceiling. So, you know, to me that makes sense. And then the fact that Porter Jr. was the clear-cut winner for most exciting, if the Bulls pick. Obviously, there's a lot of hype around him in Chicago right now. I think if Bamba were one of the other options in the poll, it would have been closer, and maybe there would have been more Bamba than Porter. Maybe. Just basically getting a feel for what Bulls Twitter has kind of been talking about for the last couple of weeks. I wouldn't have been surprised to see the race between Porter and Bamba be very close, and maybe Bamba edging Porter.
Yeah, I think Bulls fans are coming to the realization, like you and I have, especially over the last two weeks or so, that Bamba's probably not going to be there. And that's why I wanted to put guys that I felt like were most likely going to be there at number 7, should the Bulls take them. I think you're right, though, about Trae Young. I think I was just a little bit more surprised at Bulls fans being disappointed if they do and try and go for a home run. Say Michael Porter Jr. isn't available, but Trae Young is there at number 7. I guess I was more shocked at Bulls fans' willingness to maybe settle and take the guy that's the safest play at number 7 in terms of disappointment and excitement. Like, Michael Porter Jr. is obviously a huge risk, but Mikal Bridges got the second most votes as far as most excited. And then, but he also, if you turn it around, he got the second most votes for most disappointing pick too. So I've heard sides to both of it, where people say you've got to take the most surefire bet at number 7, who you can sort of plug and play right away. And I've heard other people too saying we got to stop playing it safe. This isn't the time to do that. You got to swing and try and hit a home run with this pick. And if it doesn't work out, you can find other avenues to make up for maybe taking a swing and a miss on a number 7 pick. So I guess I was more shocked at the split and the divide of Bulls fans so far.
Well, I mean, let's be real. Do Bulls fans agree across the board on anything? No.
That's true.
Bulls fans have very differing opinions, and a lot of time they'll get testy with one another on Twitter just because it's like, oh, well, my opinion is the only opinion, it's the only right one. And I'm not taking myself out of that category of Bulls fans. I have my opinions, and if I think my opinion is right and yours is wrong, I'm going to tell you that I think I'm right and you're wrong. That Bulls fans are, and you have to give the fan base in general credit for being one of the most passionate fan bases in the league. Even in a season as ugly as the one we just endured, I mean, Jordan, you and I have tons of people listening to this podcast. We have tons of people calling in, texting in, interacting with us on Twitter. Even though Bulls fans are disappointed in how a tanking season went, that is how passionate the fan base is. So, yeah, there's going to be a difference of opinion on a lot of stuff, including who people think the Bulls should add in this draft. But by and large, that's the great thing about Bulls Nation. Yeah, we can kind of get at each other and pick at each other. And, you know, things can get ugly sometimes if there are strong differences of opinion. But that's the beauty of debate, man. Like, this show, before you and I took over this Locked On Bulls podcast, we did a show called The Debatables. And most of the fun about talking about the Bulls in the NBA is having a difference of opinion.
Completely agree. And I think that's the testament to how big this fan base is and how passionate they are. Is we look at our podcast numbers, our website numbers, we look at Twitter in general, and the Bulls were terrible this year, and I felt like the hype around them was still the same as if they were trying to compete maybe like 2 years ago with Jimmy Butler and Rondo and Wade. It's just crazy how locked in the fan base is to this team no matter what they're doing. So that's really a testament to Bulls Nation out there and to Bulls fans who, even with a rebuild, like you had said, and a disappointment in sliding from number six to number seven. There is still so much hype around this team, and I got to say, I love it. Now, we all appreciate it here, especially because we try to deliver the best content for you guys, especially in this rebuild and going through this offseason. You might not be getting as much Bulls content as you might like, so that's why we're trying to be here 5 days a week for you guys. So if there's anything you guys want to talk about, hit us up at 331-979-1369. If you want to leave us a voicemail, if you've got some opinions on who the Bulls should take at number seven, maybe at number 22, if you think the Bulls are legitimate free agent players this summer, leave us a voicemail there as well. We got to take a short break, but when we come back, we're finishing up with all of your voicemails, your texts, your questions in a full-on mailbag for this Wednesday. So stay right with us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. All right, we are back here taking your mailbag questions like we do every week here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can text us voicemails at 331-979-1369. You can always hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, or at Bulls underscore Peck. Hit us up on Facebook as well. Love to hear from you. So anybody who wants to text, call in, leave questions, you've got multiple places to do that. And we appreciate everybody who's been interacting with us so far. We keep continuing to get new texters, new callers, new people interacting with the show every single day. So we appreciate everybody out there. So to kick this off, first one comes from the 620. It says, "Hey guys, multi-part question here. I've been reading a lot about the draft recently, and it seems like more people think that Michael Porter Jr. will translate more as a four than a three. What do you guys think of this? What's the reasoning, and what would the fit with the Bulls be if that were to hold true?"
That's an interesting question. I think Porter Jr. feels confident that he can play at the three or the four at the NBA level. And when he was talking at the combine, I mean, he talked about not just offensively, but defensively being able to guard one through four confidently. I don't know about that. I think that's some pretty bold talk from Porter Jr., but that's the only talk you expect to hear from players at the combine leading up to the draft. Obviously, for the Bulls specifically, in their situation, they would look to him as a guy, hopefully, to fill in at the three, because that is their greatest position of need right now. And Lauri Markkanen, for everything that the Bulls might feel optimistically about Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, is the one player on this roster who is as close as you can get to untouchable right now and locked in at his position at the four. And yes, there are some people talking about, well, what kind of minutes can Markkanen maybe play at the five as his NBA career develops, and there's certainly some possibilities there, but most, by and large, logically, Markkanen is the Bulls' four of the future. If that's the case, and the Bulls are high on Michael Porter Jr. and willing to take a risk on Michael Porter Jr., he has to play the three. Now, there, as I just said, maybe there are some times when it's either Markkanen or maybe Bobby Portis getting some minutes at the five once Robin Lopez has moved on, assuming Felicio is not long for this world, where you can flirt with the idea of playing Porter Jr. at the four as opposed to the three. And then in, you know, maybe whoever it is playing the three, maybe it's having two smaller guards done, and maybe, you know, somebody else, maybe they do take a point guard. Maybe they take Porter and they take a flyer on a point guard at 22. Who knows? But maybe you have Dunn and another smaller guard in the backcourt. You have LaVine at the three, Porter at the four, and then, I don't know, Markkanen or Bobby or whoever at the five. That 3-4-5 with Dunn running things would be a pretty interesting scoring offense. Like, that would be a pretty lethal offense. If you have LaVine, Porter Jr., and Markkanen playing together, all sorts of offensive options, then the worry becomes, and I think this is something you and I have touched on before, the defensive worry of playing LaVine and Porter Jr. together at the three and the four, or at the two and the three. So as far as Porter Jr. and where he fits better in the NBA, I mean, I think he could, based on the players around him, he could play either. I don't know defensively if he can handle some of the bigger, stronger fours in the league, and his footwork guarding around the perimeter still definitely needs some work. Bulls specifically, because of Lauri Markkanen, he makes more sense being plugged into the three.
I think that hits it pretty much on the head. The only person that I can think of that has developed better at the four rather than the three coming into the league, especially a highly touted prospect, would be a guy like Tobias Harris. You think about his time in Orlando and in Detroit. Now he's in LA. There was a lot of movement, especially when he was young, of trying to force him to play the three when they realized he wasn't really a great wing player. And he thrived better when he was with the Pistons and now with the Clippers at playing the four. So I can understand that comparison from a guy that's kind of like a in-betweener, a 6'8 to 6'9 guy with a 7-plus wingspan. I can understand the comps there. The thing, watching Michael Porter's very limited film, because basically the only thing that's out there is his 50-some minutes from playing at Missouri and then also some of his basketball highlights too, is I think I came up with a couple red flags for his game, and one being his shot isn't very quick. He's out of control when he dribbles a lot. If you watch him on fast breaks, and I've seen multiple highlights where, yeah, he's finished the play, but he's sort of out of control at times. And so that would be my concern, him developing at the three rather than the four. Like you had said, though, for this Bulls team specifically, Lauri Markkanen is locked in, and that's not saying that Lauri Markkanen can't take on a couple different, in short spurts, be able to play the five if Bobby Portis comes into the game, or maybe Michael Porter Jr. if you're playing in a small ball lineup. They're going to try and mix and integrate things to see if that can work at times. But ultimately, I think you're doing Lauri Markkanen a disservice by playing him at the five, especially early on in his career. Maybe if he bulks up in 2, 3, 4 years from now and can take on some of that responsibility as far as a rebounder. So I just don't see, if the Bulls do draft him, them trying to convert him to play the four. He might get a handful of minutes here and there in rotation spots just to try and mix things up in Fred Hoiberg's system. But ultimately, if you're drafting him, you want him to play the three and nowhere else.
Yeah, I think that's right as far as where the fit is for the Bulls. But it's also worth mentioning that the best team in the league right now, other than some funny minutes for JaVale McGee, is playing basically their entire rotation without any true quote unquote centers. I mean, Kevon Looney, Jordan Bell.
True.
The Warriors, and their death lineup, when Iggy is healthy. You're playing Draymond at the five. It's not like Markkanen can't play minutes at the five as his NBA career evolves. I think he absolutely can. And in that case, if the Bulls all of a sudden have a wealth of guys who fit best in the four, whether if they do keep Bobby Portis, if they do draft Michael Porter Jr., there are ways, and I don't know if Fred Hoiberg is the guy going forward to figure out how to best utilize those players, but Steve Kerr has done a pretty good job of evolving the way that NBA five-player rotations or five-player rosters function on both ends of the court. So it's not necessarily like, well, Markkanen can't play the five because he's not that traditional five. Absolutely, Markkanen can play the five at some point, and Porter can play the four if that's what ends up happening. It's just a matter of making sure that guys are in the most optimum spots to be successful. And I think you're right when you say that when it comes to Markkanen, at least in his early career, that is the four, not the five. And that means that Porter Jr. would have to find his way at the NBA level playing at the three.
Where's my poster machine at? Oh, my goodness, I'm on the road now. I don't got my poster machine.
It's Gar Foreman and John Paxson. Wake up on draft night, the day of the draft, and say, we like Michael Porter Jr., we like Trae Young, we're going to take the best player available. They need to do that. And it needs not to be, Bamba's taken at five by the Dallas Mavericks, and then Trae Young went at six, and Michael Jr. is the only guy off the board. Then if that's who they truly believe is going to be their guy, that they're going to vocally say that, and they need to take him. But if they really don't have that guy, then they need to go out and take Wendell Carter Jr. They need to get Mikal Bridges. They need somebody. If they truly believe in this Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen duo, they need somebody at the three who can actually be a modern wing in the NBA and can work in Hoiberg's system effectively.
All right, thanks for the voicemail from the 815. We appreciate it. So basically, this is talking about if the Bulls should, whether or not they should play it safe or try and hit the home run, something similar to what I was talking about at the beginning of the episode. And look, I like Wendell Carter Jr. too, and I also like Mikal Bridges. I like both of those guys, and it's just really a matter of whether or not you feel like the risk is worth the ceiling that maybe Michael Porter Jr. has or Trae Young. And at the same time, too, this could also be talking about Trae Young and Michael Porter Jr. being off the board, or one of the other being off the board when you select at number 7. So it's a tricky situation when you're talking about a potential Michael Porter Jr., Mikal Bridges, Wendell Carter Jr. being available at 7. Who do you take? Or Trae Young, Mikal Bridges, Wendell Carter Jr. being available at 7. Look, this is what I'll say about this again. I believe right now the Bulls need to go and try and take the guy with the highest upside. John Paxson said they were going to take the best player available at number 7. Whether or not you believe that or not right now, that's up to you. But I would hope at least a little bit of truth is coming from that, and we'll see when June 21st rolls around. But for me, I would rather see the Bulls, if Michael Porter Jr. or Trae Young or somebody like that, and they are just madly in love with these guys and madly in love with their upside, I'd rather see them take the risk. They don't sit back on your laurels just because you took a risk on Lauri Markkanen last year and it seems to be panning out right now. I don't think the Bulls are in a situation where they just need to add a guy that can be productive but doesn't have nearly as high of a ceiling. Like, that gets you back to being, yeah, competitive maybe 2-3 years down the road in the East, but how does that get you any closer to having multiple superstars that are in control for the next 4 or 5 years, and how does that get you any closer to an NBA Finals? So if I'm the front office sitting there looking there, and Michael Porter Jr., Trae Young, or Mohamed Bamba, one of these guys with insanely high upsides are there, then I would rather see them take the risk and be able to say, you know what, we love the guy's upside, we love these guys' athleticism, we think that these guys can be a star on this team with these other pieces that we have. I'd rather see them try and hit the home run, and if they swing and a miss, I think there's other ways to kind of make up for that.
I mean, this voicemail from the 815 to me is basically a perfect microcosm of how Bulls fans feel right now, because this caller is basically telling us two different things at the same time. He's saying, if the Bulls really feel that strongly about Michael Porter Jr. and his upside, then tell us that you feel that strongly and take him. But also, I don't know about Michael Porter Jr., and that's a risk, so maybe you should just play it safe and take somebody like Wendell Carter or Mikal Bridges. So he's saying both sides of the argument that Bulls fans are having right now. Do you want the player with the higher upside that comes with a risk in Porter Jr., or do you want the Bulls to play it safe? That's the debate we're all having right now, and it seems like this caller is unconvinced himself as to which side of the fence he's on. So that's what we're talking about right now. That's what it all boils down to. I'm having troubles myself. I'm wavering a lot on where I say if Porter Jr. is available, but so is somebody like Bridges or Carter Jr. I'm changing my mind every day about where I stand on this, because it's so hard, because you want to believe in the potential of Porter Jr. But I keep going back to the if pressed, and if I were asked one way or the other, will the Bulls front office that we have come to know over several years play it safe or take a risk? It's getting closer than it used to be, but I would still lean towards them playing it safe. And I think something that nudges the needle a little bit further in that direction is that not only is Michael Porter Jr. an injury risk, but we have also heard in recent weeks from people at Mizzou that even though he was on the shelf and, you know, spending most of the season with an injury, that there are questions about his character and the fact that he might not be a great teammate. So if a potential diva problem bursts its way back into the Bulls locker room after the Bulls just got over all sorts of locker room problems, first Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade, and then Bobby Portis versus Nico Mirotic, the last thing the Bulls want right now is a headache and a diva in the locker room. And there seems to be this growing perception that that's what Michael Porter Jr. might be. So between that and the injury risk, on this fence of do you take the risk or do you play it safe, I'm leaning closer to the Bulls playing it safe.
I'm with you. I'm back and forth every single day. And it's hard. I feel like all the Bulls fans out there listening to, along with you and I, it's kind of like every day. It's like, oh, well, maybe I don't want, maybe I just rather have the Bulls play it safe and take Wendell Carter Jr. and maybe he turns into what Al Horford is now, or play it safe and take Mikal Bridges and he can be a guy that you can slot in that second unit right away and be able to play immediately. And then there's the also the opposite side of that too, is like the ceiling on Michael Porter Jr. and the risk, and also Trae Young being in, and the front office being enamored with Trae Young, and how could that possibly work here? I'm back and forth every day too as well, watching film on both of these guys, and for that fact, all four of these guys, I like all the potential that all four of those guys that we just talked about have. And so that's why I said that no matter who the Bulls take here at number seven, I don't think I'm going to be that upset, that withdrawn, and just totally out of my mind if they do decide to take one of these two risks or decide to play it safe and take one of these two guys that might be the safer bet. I told you if I had to pick somebody that I'd be most disappointed with, I think I'm with the Bulls fan base as a whole that have voted on our poll and said that I think I would be the most disappointed if they took Trae Young, just because of what they said and what I saw from Dunn and how that might work with LaVine as well. And look, if he turns out to be a guy that can be a 37-40% three-point shooter, and I'm cool with that. But for right now, I think I would be the most disappointed with them taking another point guard in this draft at number seven.
All right, moving on here, we're going to kind of throw two questions together. Sam from LA, one of our regular texters, what's up Sam, is wondering about what the Bulls might do in free agency. He's saying, I know all the hype right now is around the draft, but what will the Bulls do this summer in free agency? Of course, you and I were talking earlier in today's show about the Woj bomb, quote unquote Woj bomb, that came out. That was really just speculation. And then here's another text from the 708 that says, frankly, I'm embarrassed being a Bulls fan. So many of us are blind for wanting MPJ, Trae Young, thinking we can trade up, wanting Parker, trade for Kawhi, Towns, etc. Thank you. Thank you, sir or ma'am, 708, for showing some amount of logic. You're preaching to the choir here with those comments. That being said, I'm not the biggest LaVine fan for the future of the Bulls. I do believe they need defense. If Orlando decides to let Aaron Gordon walk, highly doubt that they do, Bulls should be all over it. They've let Oladipo and Tobias go. We saw how that turned out. I like Gordon's defensive versatility. He's valuable in today's league and has really grown as a shooter. Athleticism speaks for itself. What do you guys think? So, Sam from LA and the 708 texter are wondering about the Bulls in free agency, and 708 specifically, Aaron Gordon, restricted free agent this summer. Jordan, what do you think about that?
I really like Aaron Gordon's game, but it goes back to the conversation that we just really had. So if you bring Aaron Gordon in, then it doesn't that mean that they're going to have to play a semi-small front court in Aaron Gordon and Lauri Markkanen, and in year two already, you're going to have to try and develop Lauri Markkanen to play at the five? And like, that's not the biggest deal in the world, but for one, I don't think Orlando is that stupid to give their last piece in that can make them potentially a good team in the future. I feel like they've given up on way too many guys way too early. And to me, letting Aaron Gordon walk would be the biggest mistake Orlando would make. And I feel like between that and the fact that they have the number six pick too as well, if you can bring back Aaron Gordon on a long-term deal and then they decide to take Trae Young, they've got something cooking down in Orlando, at least in those two positions. So for me, I just don't see Orlando letting him go, and if they do, it would have to be just some monstrous contract that you're going to give Aaron Gordon. And look, like, if the Bulls are really sold on him, sure, but I just don't see him leaving Orlando. I don't see Orlando letting him get away, especially because things have gone so terribly over the last few years for Orlando, and them giving up all the players that they have, Tobias Harris, Victor Oladipo, etc., etc. So yeah, I really like Aaron Gordon's game. I just don't see him leaving Orlando, though.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I do really like Aaron Gordon. It's crazy to think that this dude's been in the league for four full seasons now, and his most recent two seasons have seen big jumps in his points per game, his rebounds. He started to develop more of a three-point shot, really close to 34% This past season, after, you know, being in the high 20s for the first 3 years of his career, and he's still only 22. He's going to be 23 in a few months at the end of the summer, but still a very young player in this league with lots of room to grow. I love the idea of him and Markkanen playing together on this Bulls squad, but I am with you in the fact that I find it near impossible levels of unlikely that the Magic let him go. The Magic are languishing, trying to get something going in the post-Dwight Howard years, and they have just failed and failed and failed. They know that Gordon has the potential to be something special in this league and still has so many years ahead of him. And it's not like they're going to have to pay him a supermax. He's a restricted free agent, so they can match any offers that he might get. And he might get some offers if he takes meetings and wants to see what else is out there, if he's not, you know, in love with the idea of staying in Orlando and signing another max deal there, or signing another deal there. He can sign a multi-year deal with Orlando, but they're not going to have to pay through the nose to keep him. You know, the five-year supermax is not on the table, so they might have to pay him a, you know, a big contract, but it's probably something that the Magic are willing to pay him that other teams aren't. I would be surprised if the Bulls outbid Orlando for Aaron Gordon.
I'd agree, too, and maybe even more so if LeBron decides to go to Houston this summer and Houston's not able to pay Clint Capella. I feel like the Bulls would be more in play for a guy like Clint Capella than Aaron Gordon if we're talking about tossing big-time money at guys. I feel like that's somebody that I would rather see the Bulls pursue than maybe somebody like Aaron Gordon. And look, same age, just I think different, a little bit different playing style. Clint Capella fits way better at the five, and you can leave Lauri Markkanen where he's at. Another person too, real quick, Matt, because I know we've had a couple texters and people tweeting at us about this. We've touched on it maybe a month ago, but I want to just bring it back real quickly because we've had a couple people ask. Nerlens Noel in free agency, if he is cheap enough and you bring him on a 1-3 year deal and he's cheap enough, do you take the risk on maybe bringing him in? Because we've heard not only from people in Dallas who don't think that he's really, he's all about himself, he doesn't really care about other teams. We've heard the disconnect that he had in Philadelphia. You look at some of the Colangelo burner account tweets that his wife was sending off, he was sending off, all the stuff that they were saying about Nerlens Noel, saying just he's all about himself and all he cares about is what's best for Nerlens Noel. What do you think about a guy? Do you think that bringing a guy like that in, some of these players in this locker room could show him the way, especially because he's so young? He's already battled a couple injuries. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and I mean, this might be a bit of a open and shut case and a closed-minded take from me right here, but I don't care. I don't want anything to do with Nerlens Noel after that stuff got leaked out by Philly's burner accounts. There were some questions about his character even before that happened, and his work ethic even before that happened. And basically, we all just got proof from the horse's mouth, the people that worked with him in Philadelphia, his bosses, that, yeah, this kid's got a bad attitude and a low work rate. So sorry if I don't want that guy to be coming in to this Bulls rebuild right now. That's my long and short answer. No, I mean, I'm sorry. It's an interesting prospect. I know a lot of Bulls fans are talking about his potential fit on this roster, but with those reports coming out from the source that they have come from, there has to be some level of truth to that, and I don't want any part of it.
I don't know about bringing in, I know you said this earlier, you don't know about bringing a guy in that's kind of a head case and sort of having an ego and just being about himself, talking about maybe some of the rumors about Michael Porter Jr. Same goes with Nerlens Noel. So I think I'm with you too. I mean, maybe if it's a one year deal, a flyer, taking a flyer on a guy, sure, why not? Like if it's only a 1 year deal or a 2 year deal, I would be all right with it. I'd be indifferent about it. I wouldn't be excited. I wouldn't be disappointed. But I totally get the concerns about him just being about himself and maybe potentially destroying what that locker room's built up in 1 year of time, because it took a while. It took a while for people to really trust that locker room again. And I think they finally took that step in the right direction, and you don't want a guy to come in from the outside and just break everything that they've built up in 8 months in a season.
That's what I'm saying, man. That's what I was saying about MPJ. The Bulls finally right now seem to have a healthy locker room filled with players that like each other and Are you willing to risk that right now for everything else that you might be skeptical about with this rebuild? The talent that's on the court, the cohesion of the players on the roster, the locker room and the young guys that are playing together this season all generally seem to get along and like each other. Once Nico got moved and the Bobby Nico saga was over, this is a positive chemistry locker room. And do you want to risk that bringing in a guy like Nerlens Noel? To me, I wouldn't.
It's called congratulations. You played yourself.
Hey, Matt, Jordan, it's Robert Lombard. I got a question for you. With the top four picks seeming pretty solidified, or at least that the projected top four would definitely go within the top six, being Ayton, Doncic, Bagley, and Jack Jr., what is your best and worst case scenarios for what happens with picks 5-6? That would obviously dictate what's left with Bulls at 7. Between, I guess it would be everybody that we've been talking about already, but Trae Young, Mo Bamba, Michael Porter Jr., Wendell Carter, and I guess even Mikal Bridges and Colin Sexton, although it seems unlikely that they would get taken before 7. So anyways, just wonder what your thoughts on there, and thanks for the podcast.
All right, thanks for the voicemail, Robert. So basically the worst case scenario that could happen between 4 and 6, leaving the Bulls with a decision to make. I think if I had to pick, worst case scenario is Mo Bamba goes at 5, which is probably likely, which sucks. And maybe Orlando takes Michael Porter Jr. at 6, or they decide to take Wendell Carter Jr. and take a center at 6. I think being left with the decision on whether or not to take Trae Young at 7, I think could be worst case scenario for the Bulls, because you've got a decision on whether, like we had just talked about, whether to play it safe or try and hit the home run. I feel like for the front office to make that decision, that would be worst case scenario for them. I think worst case scenario for us is if Michael Porter Jr. and Trae Young and Mohamed Bamba are all off the board, which probably unlikely at that point for those three guys to be off the board in the first 6 picks. Probably unlikely, but that leaves you with the options of Wendell Carter Jr., Mikal Bridges, and basically that's it. So I feel like there would be worst case scenario. But like I had said before, any of the four guys that we had just talked about in length and seem like the most interested in joining the Bulls at number 7 and the Bulls equally as likely, I feel like I'm okay with any one of the four guys. I'm a little higher on some and a little lower on others, but I feel like worst case scenario is the two guys that you thought were going to be there at 7 to maybe hit the home runs are already off the board.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you there. Worst case scenario to me is the top four go as expected. 5 is Bamba. 6 is Wendell Carter. I don't know that the Magic would really be that high on him. But then the Bulls are left deciding between an undersized point guard in Trae Young, a huge health risk, and a potential locker room problem and diva with Michael Porter Jr., and then Mikal Bridges, the 3-and-D wing that this team could very much use, but is kind of an unexciting pick. So to me, if that's the worst case scenario, and then the best result of that worst case scenario, in my opinion, would probably be taking Bridges. And some of you might think I'm crazy for saying take Bridges over Porter. But the more I'm reading about Porter, the more we're hearing about Porter, I don't know if I trust him saying his back is completely healthy. And it sounds like a lot of people don't believe that he is a good teammate. So that's the worst case scenario to me. If they don't get Bamba and Carter, the young center who they really, really like, somehow suddenly, surprisingly, gets taken at 6, and then they're left to choose between a diva with a back problem, an undersized point guard, and Bridges. That would be, to me, the biggest disappointment, the worst-case scenario. Best-case scenario, obviously, is the Dallas Mavericks decide to take a risk on Porter, take him 5. Orlando takes Trae Young 6, and the Bulls get to steal Bamba. That's best-case scenario.
I think I'm with you, too. That sums it up perfectly. I think we both have the same opinion there. And that's the thing, is like, if Trae Young and Michael Porter Jr. are both there at 7, who's the bigger risk to take?
I'm gonna be, if that happens on draft night and the Bulls are sitting there and it's Porter Jr. and Trae, I'm just gonna be pacing furiously, you know, stress drinking until the fridge is dry. Like, oh God, please, like, please don't let this turn into a disaster.
Who's the bigger risk, though? As we kind of finish up the show, who do you think, if Trae Young's there and Michael Porter Jr., who's the bigger risk to take there?
God, that's a tough question. That is a very tough question. Bigger risk, I think, is Porter Jr. Because I think if you're talking about the term risk and what it means, you have more to lose with Porter Jr. than you do with Trae Young. If Trae Young surprises everybody and actually turns out to be the second coming of Steph Curry, I mean, there's not a great likelihood that that will happen. And there is a risk in taking an undersized point guard because, as I was talking about earlier on today's show, they don't always pan out at the NBA level. But Porter Jr., the gap between risk and reward is so severe. A kid who people were talking about being the number one overall pick, who's now expected to slide into the mid to late stages of the lottery, maybe. And he's a risk with the back injury. He is a risk with his character, as we've heard in recent weeks. And if the Bulls take him, they're swinging for the fences, and it could blow up in their face. If the Bulls take a risk with Trae Young, they're looking past the undersized, they're looking past the defensive weaknesses and saying, we still think we like the idea of playing this kid in the backcourt alongside Chris Dunn, and we love the fact that he can shoot. He's a gifted passer. He has all these things. And, you know, the weaknesses, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, and we'll try to build on those weaknesses. It's a tough question, but I think that Porter Jr. is the bigger risk.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there too, and which is kind of funny because I said that I would be most disappointed if they took Trae Young at number 7, but I think you're right. Like, you look at the depth that the Bulls could have at the guard position next year if they do take Trae Young. Trying to figure out whether or not Chris Dunn, Trae Young, and Zach LaVine can all play together, and then say you figure it out. Say one of those three guys doesn't work out, then I feel like you have an opportunity to move one of those players. So I feel like in terms of whether or not this would be the biggest bust, I feel like Trae Young would be a little bit, just by a little bit, the safer bet because of the depth that you already have at point guard or at the guard position in general.
And if Porter Jr. does in fact show that he has lingering back issues his rookie year as a 20-year-old, good luck trading that guy.
Yeah, that's very true too. And the scrutiny that would come down from Bulls fans too, especially immediately, would not look good. But I still think Michael Porter Jr., if healthy, is still has the highest ceiling of any player in this draft. And you look at that, and that's going all the way back to even when he was in high school, still talking about back in the fall when we were saying that he could potentially be the consensus number one pick. I still think that you'll keep this in the back of your mind. What the Bulls were saying about potentially getting him in the top three picks back in the fall too, I don't think that you should completely wipe everything away from what they had said and what they felt about him back early on in the fall. So take that and take what you've heard already from the combines and some of the stuff that's been written about him. Take all of that and kind of formulate your own opinion. But if I had to pick in terms of bigger bust, bigger risk, it would probably be Michael Porter Jr. But at the same time, I think he's got the higher ceiling of the two players.
Between Porter and Trey?
Yes.
I would agree. If healthy, he's got the higher ceiling. And, you know, we talked about that on yesterday's show, Monday's show, about how all that point guard talk that came out from the Bulls via Vincent Goodwill right now could just be a smokescreen, and the Bulls trying to convince some team ahead of them to take Trae Young and or Colin Sexton because they really do want Porter Jr. to fall in their lap at 7. That's absolutely possible.
He didn't come for the massage. He came for the facial. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, I just saw your guys' thing on Twitter. Out of any of the prospects that the Bulls could possibly take, which would be the most disappointing, it's none. Their rebuild was rapidly advanced. They found something in Markkanen. They developed Dunn. They're going to get LaVine for cheap. In worst case scenario, LaVine doesn't work out. They're not going to be handcuffed to him at a max deal. So you really can't go wrong with this 7th pick. It is a big pick. But if it's Mikal, which I feel like most of the people are going to complain and whine about, you're getting a lockdown defender that could possibly develop to something really nice on a spot-up offense. So regardless of who the Bulls take, fans should be excited for the future because we're heading in the right path with all the space we have and this young talent we're accruing.
All right, appreciate that last voicemail. So there's a couple different things in there that I just want you and I to touch on real quick. I understand the argument about people feeling like this Bulls team is ahead of schedule in a rebuild. I can understand that from singularity in terms of different players in their own right. Lauri Markkanen, great. Developed great last year. Still's got a lot of room to grow, but we saw the potential that's there. Chris Dunn, when he wasn't out with these freak injuries, it looked great at times, and I think can be a lockdown defender and be a really good point guard for the future, and I still hold high regard for him. Zach LaVine, we didn't get to see all of that much. We saw spurts and little highlights of what he could potentially be. We saw a lot more things that maybe troubled Bulls fans. I think here, if you're talking about the safer risk, the safer pick in Mikal Bridges, I get that argument. Believe me, I understand it. If they do take Mikal Bridges and they really like him, he's a guy that you can insert right away and can have an impact immediately. But it goes back to the point of you haven't seen Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine all play together for an entire season. How many games did they play together as a whole? What, less than 15 games together, those three? And that was partly because they shut a lot of guys down at the last month and a half or so. Chris Dunn was battling injuries. Zach LaVine was just coming back. Lauri Markkanen had his kid. There was a bunch of different things that were going on in the last 2 or 3 months of the season. So to say that this rebuild is rapidly advanced, I think is a little bit too positive for me. But I would definitely say this rebuild is going better in year one than I thought it was going to, with at least just the roster in place. Not talking about the slotting of the picks this year, the lottery, whatever you want to talk about there as far as the negative. But I'd agree in some capacity that this rebuild is a little bit better than what maybe we expected at the beginning. And hey, that's sort of why Paxson and Gar Forman both made the trade for Jimmy Butler, and they said that this was going to be that they didn't want to hang around the lottery for an extended period of time, and that they felt like this was a step ahead of what other teams were doing when they completely tore it down because they got LaVine done, and then Markkanen ended up turning out to be what he was. So what do you feel about this if the Bulls do decide to take the safe pick in Mikal Bridges?
I mean, I'd be okay with it. Another one of our texters that we didn't quite get to had a comment about how they didn't want the Bulls to take the safe pick and Bridges because it's like, all right, well, you're just like adding a Luol Deng to this team, and it's, you know, a kid who plays hard and a team that plays hard but is never actually going to win a championship. So I'm sorry, but the Bulls adding a Luol Deng to this roster would not be a bad thing. This Bulls roster could absolutely use a Luol Deng right now. Let's not forget that Luol Deng was a two-time All-Star and in his prime considered one of the better two-way players at his position in the league. Bridges, I think, has that potential. As far as the rebuild is ahead of schedule, I don't know. I don't know if I'm sold on that. And largely, I don't know if I'm sold on that because I still have a giant fearful question mark attached to Zach LaVine and what exactly he is going to be for this team moving forward. But if the Bulls do, quote-unquote, play it safe and take Bridges, I would be far less unhappy about that than I would be about them taking a big risk on either of those two guys that we were just talking about. You need a player talented at that 3-and-D position. Paxson has said it time and again. Bridges could be that kid. If the Luol Deng comparison that this texture made is a bad thing in your opinion, then you have a great disrespect for the young in his prime Luol Deng, because that dude was a hell of a player.
Yeah, I was going to say, for Bulls fans, don't think about Luol Deng when he was playing out there with like 40% of a body. Like when Tom Thibodeau ran him into the ground, I feel like Bulls fans have that ingrained in their mind more so than the beginning of his career and when he was in his prime, like you had said, bringing up his two-time All-Star back-to-back years and being an All-Star. Luol Deng also came into the league at 19, so, and played in 61 games and started in 45 for that Bulls team in 04 and 05. So there is a little bit difference there, but I'm with you too. If Mikal Bridges turns into a Luol Deng and doesn't get run into the ground like maybe some of his coaches did to Luol Deng, I'm fine with that. That's totally cool with me. Like, Luol Deng was a phenomenal player, phenomenal defender, and a phenomenal wing player. And he also averaged for his career 15 points per game. So we already established that if Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen are going to be here long term, those are your first two scoring options. Am I right? So you don't necessarily need your wing player to be a full offensive firepower. You more so need a guy that's going to help you out on the defensive end and allow Zach LaVine to stay on the floor. And if you don't have a guy there that can defend and help out and not put all the pressure on Chris Dunn, it's going to be difficult to keep Zach LaVine on the floor and maybe let him flourish in what he does best on the offensive side of the ball. Also, tuned to the cheap contract before anybody flips out of hearing that, I think he's more so talking about not having to pay Zach LaVine nearly anything towards the maximum level of a deal. And I agree with him. I think we've had extended conversations at the end of the season about his contract. And I think both of you and I agreed that it's probably going to be somewhere around 16 to 20 million per year. It just depends on how many years he gets.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that is, you know, I was talking about my skepticism and my fear about what Zach LaVine means to the rebuild right now. I will feel a heck of a lot better about that if and when the Bulls front office manages to sign him, keep him in town for a 2-year deal, maybe a 3-year deal. That's nowhere close to max level money, to keep their financial flexibility for the summer of 2019 and actually see with a full healthy season if Zach LaVine is a guy they want to keep around.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can send all of your questions if you want to interact with the show, if you want to be a part of our mailbag discussion next week, or you want to react to anything that we were talking about on today's episode or earlier this week, hit us up at 331-979-1369. You can always leave your questions for us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, or at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Dash radio.com and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, that's going to about do it here. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.